You've reached the top of the hour. This is Airball, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. This was Yusuf Latif, Elliot Smith, Dara Dorian, and Sylvie, in that order. I'm going to play a bit more music, but then we'll be yapping about basketball for the next hour. Yo. Testing. I'm on. All right. Should I just put them all on? I don't know. Mic four. Do mic four. Someone did like a weird setup on this. All right. How's everyone doing? This is Airball.
Hello.
Let's go. We're the premier Tufts basketball talk show.
Say that every time, bro.
Yeah, the one and only destination for a listener, for a curious mind to learn about the game of basketball and to hear some goofy stuff along the way. An impromptu slot. We aren't normally on at this time. We're normally on at 5 in the morning on Saturdays.
Normally? Have you done that yet?
No, never. And I don't really know if I ever will. But like maybe this weekend.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, no. 5 a.m. Saturday is like an absolutely brutal time to talk sports. I don't think
my mind would be flowing enough to even utter any takes.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, maybe some diehards are like awake at that time, but I really doubt it. So me and my friend Will already talked about the Celtics, but we can talk about them again. Like, there's a lot to talk about there. Talk about the Nuggets game. But maybe we should start with some, like, I don't know, some would you rathers or some, I don't know.
I got some good questions.
Absolutely.
Give me a second. But before we start, I want to show you a little meme right here. It is the Kia race to the MVP ladder for, what is today, March 6th. Number 3, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Number 2, Nikola Jokic. And number 1, Josh Hart.
Josh Hart. Yeah, I mean, you know,
triple double king. Milk, I know milk master. One of my favorite players in the NBA right now.
In a way, like, I have like a spiritual connection to Josh Hart. Cause like, and not in like a weird way.
In what way?
I mean, well, first of all, when I gaze into his soul, I feel something. He was on the Lakers. Lakers on one of our bummy teams. And he was always just one of those guys. He's like one of Lonzo's sidekicks who was just like some random fool. Like, no one really like cared about Josh Hart. He had some like okay fits. That was all I knew him for.
But he plays hard. I mean, he probably played hard from the beginning, but yeah, I feel like he always puts in effort, always plays minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as a Knicks fan, like, what can you say about Josh Hart? Like, he's the ideal role player. You know, would five Josh Harts win a championship? No, they wouldn't.
No.
Would five Josh Harts make the 10 seed and win over a lot of fans trying?
Yeah.
Also probably not. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of love there. For everyone who has had Josh Hart on their team, probably loves Josh Hart. But that five-man question, how good would five Derek Whites be?
Pretty damn good. I mean, they beat the Pistons.
Oh, 100%. They would beat the Pistons. They wouldn't beat the Spurs. They would probably beat the Hornets, to be honest.
Of course they wouldn't beat the Spurs.
The Derricks. I love thinking about
this. The Hornets, maybe. Like, I don't know, actually. The Hornets got size.
The Hornets have size, but they're also the Hornets.
Yeah.
And you're going against, like, one of the most formidable, switchable defensive lineups ever. Let's grant one of the Derek Whites can be 7 foot tall. Just for the sake of fairness.
Are we modifying height, you know?
Like, imagine how good would 5 7-foot tall Derek Whites be? Probably, like, the greatest team of all time.
Hey, just like D'Lo, everybody's trying to be like Derek White. Everyone's trying to be like D. White.
Yeah.
D. White with no hair is a different animal, bro.
It's true. Who would win? 5 Derek Whites that are 5'4", but they're bald.
Okay.
Or 3 Derek Whites in their current... What am I on about? Let's stop.
He's pretty bald. All right, I have a few cool questions here.
Yeah.
And speaking of the Knicks, I was recently bored or something and, like, was going back into past drafts, right? Also, yeah, you should cue up some little music to play in the back.
Some Dave Brubeck or something.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing it on the doc we had last time.
Okay.
Yeah. All good. Oh, we're getting a phone flash.
Oh. Should I pick it up?
Yeah,
I'm going to try
it. How do you do it? Try it. Who's calling us?
Hello. Who's this?
You turn them on.
Ted Margolis.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, it's my grandpa. Oh, my goodness. Pops, you're on the radio right now.
Oh, great.
This is an unexpected surprise. And
what's up, man?
Yeah, the Pops, meet Luca. The radio, meet Pops.
Hey, Luca. Hey, Luca, are you the Knicks fan?
Yeah, resident.
All right, I only want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to Jonas.
Great.
This guy's an old head. Ask him about NBA defense, and he'll be like, "Whoa, back in the day."
No. The fact of the matter is, the NBA hasn't been playing defense for 15 years.
15 years. Wow. What you're saying? So, like, after the 2004 Pistons, they just stopped. There's no more defense.
Well, here's the thing, and they've constructed it that way. In my day, they didn't have, you know, the clock. So people, you know, could run plays. And when people run plays, guess what the other side has to do? They have to play defense. So the NBA decided, you know, we need more scoring. So how do we do that? So they run up a clock. And there's no time to really play real defense. So the coaches say, you know, just if you could just please get between your man and the basket, I would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10 or 15 times a game, they probably do that.
Yeah. I mean, okay, we've argued about this a lot in the past. I remember I was trying to convince you, like, in November, that the NBA had defense. And for some reason, I thought it would be a good idea to put on a Hawks-Pacers game. That didn't work.
That's probably the worst.
Yeah, they were scoring in the 140s, and it, like, just looked really bad. And then, remarkably, the next time I was at your house, we watched the All-Star game. So, like, the two times I've tried to get you to watch basketball might have been the two worst opportunities to see the game be good. But regardless, Pops, what are your earliest sports memories? Like, what do you remember from your childhood about baseball or basketball or literally anything?
Well, see, when I was a kid, you know, living in Queens, we played stickball.
Wait, where in Queens?
We played basketball. You know, there was always one kid on the block who had a basketball. Playing stickball, we had to find a broom and a ball, and that was good for the whole summer.
Yep.
It was both competitive and a lot of fun. So today, you need $18,000 worth of equipment, and you have to get the same kind of equipment that the other kids have gotten.
Yeah.
To play any sport. I mean, my God, yeah, a kid playing hockey, can you imagine the cost of that? Mm. So we had much more of a community kind of sports thing. And you were judged by how good you were in a particular sport. So the kids on the block, if you got Charlie on your team, man, that was worth three runs.
Who was the best athlete that you remember growing up with?
It was different in different sports.
Ah. Yeah.
And then when I got a little older, they developed a club for us. You know, some guy got, you know, we got uniforms and we would play baseball in the parks, and they had umpires and people had come to see us.
Hmm.
And, you know, it was a lot of fun. I mean, sports was only fun, and there was very little talking about it. Today, people talk about sports sometimes more than they play them.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's very true for us. Hence, we're always just talking about our sports.
Now, am I saying it was better then? No, I'm just saying it was different, because every age, you know, things are different.
Yeah.
We didn't have the preponderance of television, so we weren't sitting around watching television all the time. We certainly didn't have these little boxes that rule most people's lives, you know, because, oh my God, I didn't get 27 emails today, my life is over.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. So we just played ball, and the only thing that stopped us from playing ball was when it got dark.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I have to say this, we would play in the dark.
How do you play baseball in the dark? Like, what was the method?
It's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, you still have good eyes. You know, you don't.
Oh, yeah, like, I have a question. Where in Queens did you grow up? Where do you play?
Well, there were parks. There were parks, and we. I lived down near not too far from where the Ash tennis stadium is now.
Okay.
And there was a lake there, and we had a couple of fields and. A couple of basketball courts.
Hmm. Do you have any memories of, like, what the NBA was like? Like, did it have any... Was it even on your radar? I know the NBA was much smaller and less prevalent back in... You grew up in, like, the 50s and, like, late 50s, early 60s.
Well, or
like,
know, during the 50s. To me, it was the golden age of the Knicks when Frazier and Willis and those guys, ended up playing. I mean, the sport was a beautiful thing to watch. I mean, there was nothing more exciting than watching Jerry West bring the ball down court and Willis, and Clyde guarding him.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an epic battle.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I have a few, I have to ask questions now because resident Knicks fan here. I went, I don't know if you know, but at the Brooklyn Museum, there's a Spike Lee exhibit. I think it should be still open right now. And I visited over break, and I took a picture. He has an insane amount of Knicks memorabilia, and I just have some players. I took a little picture of this portrait of five players, and I just I just want to know your thoughts, because I'm not very well versed in the 69-70 world champion team. So yeah. I was going to ask you about the first guy. You said you touched on Willis Reed. So I was going to say,
I didn't hear that.
I was going to say maybe Bill Bradley and Dave DeBusschere.
No,
guys,
Dave
I don't
DeBusschere.
Know about.
I mean,
Dave DeBusschere.
It was Bradley and DeBusschere up front. Willis Reed at center. Clyde was the point guard.
And Dick.
And then you had. Oh, God, the guy from Baltimore.
Yeah, Dick Barnett?
Yes, Dick Barnett. But there was another guy after that, and I can't remember who it was. Great shooter. So you had a team that played team basketball. I mean, both on offense and defense. and it was great to watch. I mean, you know,
DeBusschere was it Monroe?
A great rebounder. Willis was terrific in the post, and Bradley, of course, you know, terrific shooter.
Yeah,
and Clyde was a thing to behold. A friend of mine was working as a sports writer for one of the syndicates at the time. And after I got out of the Navy and my wife and I came back to New York, he said, hey, do you want to go to a Knicks game? So Lori and I, my wife and I, went to the game. And afterwards, he took us down to the Knicks dressing room. We were sitting around talking to the players. And my wife, who had never been to a basketball game, we were driving home, she said, boy, that was a lot of fun. And I said, that was a lot of fun. I said, nobody goes to the games this way and then goes and talks to the players.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, wait, so how does that happen? Like, how did she just, like just have those a spontaneous interaction with the players? Like,
well, we went down to the locker room and we were chatting, you know, and they said, hey, where are you from? You've got like an accent. She's telling him Canada. And, you know, and Bradley was, you know, a bright guy, obviously. He went on to become a U.S. senator here. And Clyde was, you know, just a lovely guy. I ended up doing some things legally with him later on in life. And it just, he's just a very smart, nice human being.
Yeah.
And Jonah, of course, has met him. Yeah. I took him to, Clyde's got a restaurant in New York.
I think it closed, unfortunately. But back in the day.
Did it close?
I think it did close. Let me double check that.
Oh.
It was a sick restaurant.
That's an incredible
They had like a free throw bar. And I just remember like.
A free throw bar.
They had like a little basketball court in the restaurant. It was just like just enough to shoot free throws in. I just remember that. Like I was always like super impatient when the food would come. Maybe twice, and I would just run in there and like just start hooping. And I remember like he shows up to the table and I remember he told me he's like you want to be in the NBA? I was like yeah. He's like yeah. We're gonna have to stretch him. And he like grabbed me and like pulled me up.
He held him up in the air and he said, son, you're going to have to grow.
That's so cool. I only know Clive from the MSG broadcast because he's always in an incredible suit and he never repeats, it seems like.
Yeah.
He has
but,
thousands.
You know, life is very funny and so is fame. Years later, he came up to my office and he was wearing his championship jacket.
Oh.
And he comes in, and he comes into the office in New York, and we had a meeting, and he left. And both the receptionist and one of the young lawyers came in and said to me, hey, who was that guy?
They'll never know.
Yeah, he's a pretty discreet guy. I mean, so like, I read his book, who he co-wrote with one of Pops' good friends, Ira, and it's such an interesting thing to read about his like philosophy of fashion and his philosophy of just life, because he combines like the way he talks about basketball with how he thinks about his like life off the court, and just like a level of preparation and dedication he puts into everything he does, and it might come off a bit conceited, but it's more just like a supreme level of confidence to do something like have a diamond bed and then have your name in an LED cursive font on the ceiling. That's crazy. Like that's a crazy level of confidence. And Clyde is the only guy that can pull that off, you know?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that you will find whatever it is, whether it's sports, law, finance, medicine, whatever the case is, that the people who are on top are people who work very hard at their art. And because they work hard at it and because they develop a level of understanding and knowledge, it develops in them a sense of confidence. And so they're not afraid to do what they need to do, you know, to help, you know, move the art along. And that's the key, you know. You don't go out on a basketball court and, you know, say, hey, I want to be in the NBA, walk on the court and score 50 points. You don't do that in a hospital as a doctor or in a court as a lawyer. You know, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And you've got to be willing to do it. Mm-hmm. And even more important, you got to love the work, the prep.
Mm-hmm. Hey, yeah. Same goes for a basketball podcast, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, which is ironic because we barely prepped for today. Yeah. Mainly because we weren't expecting to.
Those are some great words of wisdom, though.
Yeah.
Great.
Pops, what do you, like, I don't know if this necessarily needs to be a basketball podcast now that you're on, because, like, I'm serious, because, like, I mean, if we want to, like, steer the conversation back to basketball, I'm sure we could just, like, talk about NBA defense and whatnot, but I think maybe the listeners can get, like, maybe something more out of this, just from hearing you speak and, like, just hearing, like, your experiences. I think it's very interesting. Like, you were telling me on the phone the other day about what it was like to, or like in another sports sense, about the Yankees and Dodgers rivalry early in the 50s.
Oh yeah, well,
yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, I mean that, you know, when the Yankees and the Dodgers, and I'm talking about in the Jackie Robinson era and the Mickey Mantle era and that period of time, there were two groups of people in New York. There were the Yankee fans and the Dodger fans. And then there were the poor people who didn't know what baseball was. So we didn't talk to those people. But my best friend was an avid Dodger fan, and I'm avid Yankee fan. And every year he would tell me, this is the year. Boy, he said, we got Roy Campanella, we got Jackie Robinson, we got Carl Furillo, we got Gil Hodges, we got, you know, and he'd go on. And I would say, yeah, but you're going to lose anyways. And so the season would play out, and the Yankees and the Dodgers would meet in the World Series, and the Yankees would always win, of course. But the one year, I always remember this, that he said, this is it. He said, I'm not fooling, this is it. And this is the day Yankees are going to get slaughtered today. As it turned out, that was the day that a guy by the name of Don Larson was pitching for the Yankees. Yeah. My friend didn't talk to me for a couple of days.
Yeah.
We were so destroyed by that. I mean, but in school, it, during the World Series with the Yankees and the Dodgers, like, they just had to stop school and put a radio on in each classroom or on the PA system when the game was on. They used to play day games in those days.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, that was it. That was. I mean, people just loved their teams. And, of course, there was the argument, you know, who was the best center fielder in New York? Was it Willie Mays? Was it Duke Snyder? Was it Mickey Mantle?
And would you say, like what do you remember, like, from, I mean, I know you were a bit too young when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, but, like, what do you remember from that era? And, like, I mean, what were, like, the, I don't know. Yeah.
You know, the fact of the matter was that a lot of the greatest ball players to play baseball never got a chance to be in the major leagues because of the color of their skin. When Jackie came up, some of the stuff he went through was beyond horrible. And the more it happened, the worse it got in terms of the anger that people felt, you know, who understood that here was this really terrific ball player, a really terrific guy, who was being punished, you know, outwardly just because of the color of his skin. Yeah. He was a fantastic player.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're watching a sport, what the hell do you care what the color of a guy's skin is? You want to know if he can hit, if he can run, if he can field. And sadly, that wasn't what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, there's a story about Hank Greenberg. Jackie Robinson told a story about Hank Greenberg. He said first time he played in Detroit, and, you know, Henry Ford was a known anti-Semite, and he didn't like black people any more than he liked Jewish people. And it was pretty bad for Jackie, and they were booing him and calling him all kinds of names. And Robinson, I think he walked, and he gets down to first base, and Robinson always remembered that Hank Greenberg says, "Hey, Jackie, they've been calling me names for the longest time," he said. "They're all a bunch of idiots. Don't even listen to them. You're a great ball player." And Robinson always remembered that, because it was an act of kindness in what was a really hate-filled stadium.
Yeah. You know, speaking of, like, hate in sports, and, like, the NBA has a long history of dealing with it, and I would argue that some of the problems that the NBA deals with in, like, they, how do I phrase this? A lot of the problems the NBA deals with in racism are, in a sense, tied to the league's branding and their fear of pushing stereotypes of their players. For instance, in the 80s, they cracked down on their players doing coke, like, because it was a bad optics problem. In the early 2000s, they banned Allen Iverson from wearing the clothes he wanted because of optics. In 2004, when the Malice of the Palace happened, the NBA was very quick to condemn players and put safety regulations in the game and change a lot of just the way that security is done at games to signal their care for this optics problem. And I don't know, that's like the modern iteration of this, but it is interesting to hear how from an earlier time in sports history, it was just like much more stark. That being said, you still get NBA players getting called racist names. You still get like the Thunder commentator saying blatantly racist things about Westbrook, like, on air. This dude got fired for it, and I'm not going to repeat what he said, but to those who know, know. Like, it's still a problem, and yeah, it's just something we got to keep thinking about and talking about. Otherwise, it gets normalized, you know?
There has always been in this country a problem with the other. If you're the other, and maybe I shouldn't even say in this country, maybe in this world, maybe it's part of the human condition, but there are groups of people who seem to feel that if there isn't an other, then they are not elevated, you know? Yeah. So a guy who's really not doing well in the world, he thinks, I buy a ticket to a baseball game or a basketball game, I have the right to scream things at people who are doing much better than me, but who are the, quote, the other. And, you know, you hear some of this. I mean, I've gone to games and people are screaming things that, you know, are just outrageous. And they have no place. And they're just ugly and they're angry. But it's the anger that they're feeling, you know, and it's their problem. You know, when you hear a guy scream out something racial at a basketball game, you know that that guy has got real problems.
Yeah.
But the impact on the person who's being called out for really just being a human being, you know, can be enormous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jackie Robinson probably died earlier than he should have, because they say that the experiences he had was so traumatic that he aged.
Wow. That's insane.
I mean, Joni, you remember we went to the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Cooperstown? And you remember the letter that you saw that they had? They had a thing about Henry Aaron, a display about Henry Aaron. And do you remember that letter?
No, what did it say? I don't remember.
There was a letter. And they had it, and it was when Hank Aaron, who was, you know, he's just one of these nice human beings, you know, terrific ball player, obviously, and just a sweet man. I mean, everybody who knows him says that. So he was getting letters from people who would say, you know, and using the N-word, no blank should break Babe Ruth's record because Babe Ruth is a white man and you're not.
That's insane.
Damn.
Now, I mean, that the color of Hank Aaron's skin really had a lot to do with how many home runs you hit, right?
Yeah. I mean, anything, it was like the things he faced probably like decreased the total. So, I don't know. There's no point of speculating on this.
No, because you're dealing with somebody who is venting his own fears and his own anxieties, and you know, I mean, you asked me. I always remember this. You asked me if the letter was real, and I said, sadly, it was. But he got a lot of those letters.
Yeah. I've always imagined the experience of being famous is like in a position just of visibility is an incredibly like vulnerable and terrifying feeling. And athletes probably get used to it, famous people probably get used to it, but like to have your face just in such a public place and yeah. and to be so visible is
body.
It's an insane.
It's a great thing to think about.
Yeah,
it's the price.
Well,
of
we're living in a world now where some of these people have to. One of the expenses they have to have is they have to have special security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All right. I feel like we should. I want like a little like parting. I guess like a parting message or like parting words of wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, like I don't know. Yeah.
For me?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, you're asking a lot. Wisdom.
Yeah. What's the sign off for us, man? I mean, yeah.
You know, look, in every age, people find in sports this substitute for life issues. What do I mean by that? Well, you see a game, you see a guy under pressure, the guy makes a mistake. You know what that feels like because you've made mistakes. And you felt the pressure of those mistakes and you sympathize with the guy. And that's what sports is. It's a vignette of life, you know, multiplied because of, you know, how it's, you know, shown to us and the fact that there are crowds and fans and everything like that. But we all face the same kind of problems that basketball players or baseball players face in their everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And they come down to the same thing. They got to work hard. They got to perform. They're under pressure. They want to make more money. But more important than that, they don't want to embarrass themselves. And think about it. A guy goes to work. Maybe he's a young lawyer. And he doesn't want to embarrass himself either. Sure, he does. He wants to make more money, but sports is like a vignette of life. You can apply it, and that's why I think we all love sports, because we can watch it, and we don't have a piece of it. In other words, we're not responsible when the guy drops the ball, but we understand it.
Yeah, and we're empowered to chirp. Hence why we chirp on the radio, because it's kind of fun. Anyways.
Yeah, well, listen, one day you may be famous.
Yeah, fat chance. All right, Pops.
One day.
I'll talk to you later.
Thank you talking. Yeah,
this was a lovely conversation.
Enjoyed it, guys. Yes. And just take it easy with Charlie Brown Jr., please.
Yeah, will do. All right, for sure. I'll definitely take that advice. All right. Love you, Pops.
Bye. All right. I think that brings us to our PSA. I feel like that was great.
That was lovely.
Got serious for a little bit like that. But.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I didn't. I told him to call in, and I thought it would be in the first hour, and I wasn't expecting it at all. And then the lights flash, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's time for some serious stuff.
It's time.
Hence, all right, we got a PSA now.
Yeah.
What are we talking about
today?
Simple
stuff. Just about... you know, some pets, some puppies. we did that one recently.
I think, like, the puppies is, like everyone loves them.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. All right, we'll talk about dads, because your dad of your dad was just on. Take your time to be a dad today. Call 877-4-DAD, 411, or visit fatherhood.gov. That's fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ag Council. All right.
Absolutely. Let me try something out real quick.
Yeah. Oh, is this?
It's not working.
Le Message.
Yeah, it was gonna be Le Message, and it didn't. Oh, I know why it didn't work.
Give me a second. It's not on.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Le Message.
I'm LeBron James, and you should vote for me as president.
No, wait, that was not the right one. Where is my
LeBron James? Is crazy.
Hello, LeBron James.
Okay, these are just like bad. No, I'm not doing this anymore. Let me see. Like, we're trying to play with the soundboard. Like, there's some funny stuff. Vulture Labyrinth, sounds.
LeBron James. All right, yeah, no, let's chill with the vultures. Oh my lord. All right, yeah. So I got before your pops called on. I had some funny questions. I was going back to the drafts, past drafts, and seeing what you know, what went wrong for teams, what went right. Mm-hmm. And I have a few that really stuck out to me. So, I'm going to ask you some did you knows. I guess it's not would you rather. Did you know that I think, I don't know what year. Wait, why don't I know the year? All right. Did you know that in 2018, the Knicks passed on Mikal Bridges at 10. Passed on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who went 11, and passed on Miles Bridges at 12 to draft who?
Oh. You said 2018?
2018. Think of the position.
It wouldn't be R.J. Barrett, because R.J. Barrett was the year after.
Yeah.
Who did they draft before R.J. Barrett? Not Obi Toppin. That was the year after RJ.
I'll give you a hint. He was wearing a Fortnite suit.
I know who you're talking. It's Kevin Knox Jr. I also remember because he got bullied by Zion in the summer league, and I'm never gonna forget that.
Bro. That was probably one of the worst draft picks I've ever I can remember now. When we drafted him, I'm crazy. When we drafted him, I was like, you know, good. He fit the archetype of like a Miles Bridges or like a Mikal Bridges. But he had just no dog in him, zero dog in him. And we could have had Shabe. We could have had Mikal. The three picks after Kevin Knox, Mikal Bridges, Shabe, Miles Bridges, they're all similar positions. How do we mess that up? I don't know.
I mean, okay, to be fair, no one saw this current version of Shabe coming. Like, if anyone had seen this coming, he would have gone top one. He would have been the number one pick in that draft. Like, wait, who was number one that year? It was,
That was just a process. That was Markel, right?
Oh, you're right. It was Lonzo Markel year. That was a weird draft in retrospect, because all the real talent was the later. Top three. Tatum as well. Tatum was the best player in that draft. Yeah. Him and Shai, depending on how you want to look at it. That's going to get the people
I got a few.
Keep going.
So, in the 2008 draft, number one pick, Derrick Rose. Mm-hmm. First of all, great pick, I think.
Yeah.
But we can talk more about D. Rose later. My friend Mia wants us to try to love D. Rose.
She's a big D. Rose fan.
I love D. Rose. Who doesn't love D. Rose? At number three, the Minnesota Timberwolves later traded to the Memphis Grizzlies, selected this player, but they could have picked at four Russell Westbrook. They could have picked five Kevin Love. Actually, not really similar. They could have been Russell Westbrook. They had Goran Dragic was available.
And who did they draft? You're saying the Timberwolves drafted this
Timberwolves,
player?
But went to the Memphis Grizzlies. He's a shooting guard.
Player played for the Grizzlies. 2009, 2008.
Shooting guard with a weird name.
Oh, my God. Who?
He also played for the Bucks.
Oh, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist?
Almost.
Michael Carter-Williams?
O.J. Mayo.
Oh, my God. Okay, O.J. Mayo, I completely forgot. I'm not going to lie, like, he's one of those guys where I've watched his highlights on YouTube, and I'm just kind of blown away, like, as, like, a what-if story. This dude is a hooper.
Dude, he's still playing.
Not in the league, though, right?
No.
Yeah, where is he playing? Shanghai?
He's playing
Guangdong?
In the Egyptian Basketball Super
that's
League.
That's crazy. Oh, my God. That's a league that you don't hear very often. Like, no. Like, because, you know, like, normally when NBA fans...
the star of that league.
Yeah, let's see. Pull up his stats. What is O.J. Mayo averaging
in
Egypt?
He plays for Zamalek SC.
I would love, you know, this is kind of like a slightly like different topic, although it is related. Like, international basketball is so funny to me because it really reveals how good basketball players actually are in different leagues. Like, you can get like a bad NBA player, put him in Guangdong, and they're gonna like be the greatest player of all time.
I think, what is he averaging?
Put him in Egypt, and they're like not even like, it's like Wembanyama versus an average Joe.
I can't find the stats, but
good grief,
this is not happening. All right, I have a few more. First of all, imagine who, I mean, OJ Mayo, replacing OJ Mayo with a guy like Westbrook with his longevity. I mean, first of all, that disrupts all of OKC's like magic they had in that the early 2010s and the mid 2010s, I guess, but 2010s, 2010s, what am I saying?
Yeah, I mean, he averaged, like, OJ Mayo started his career off extremely strongly. As a rookie, he averaged 18.5 points.
I was about
to say,
he was a killer as a rookie.
38% three-point shooting in 2008 is like, that's crazy.
He was
numbers.
Nice. He was nice.
Nice player. And just didn't work out. It's unfortunate. But who else are we going to bring up?
All right. The next guy is, I mean, another lottery dilemma. 2016, the Timberwolves passed on Jamal Murray, who went at 7. Timberwolves picked at 5 to pick another guard. 2016. Who do you think they picked?
Who did the Timberwolves? Bro, my draft knowledge is lacking.
Right, I'll give you some help. This was the Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown draft.
Who did they pick?
Ben Simmons won, Ingram 2, Brown 3, Dragon Bender 4.
These names just stick out. It's like I have not heard of Dragon Bender in the last 5 years. Like,
I don't know. So who do you think? Guard. First point guard to be selected, technically. Because, I mean, I guess Benson is a point guard, but not really. First point guard. I'll give you a hint. He plays on the Utah Jazz now.
Was it Colin Sexton?
No. Nope.
No, that was Lonzo's year.
He was later.
Yeah. Damn. Was it Jordan Clarkson who got traded to the Lakers?
Nope.
Eh, I have no idea.
It was Chris Dunn.
I think the Lakers also drafted Jordan Clarkson. That was like a complete shot in the dark.
Chris Dunn. Yeah. I think, I don't know, actually.
And he was on the Lakers way before them, so it's relevant.
But yeah, this imagine having, the pick after Buddy Hield, right after Chris Dunn.
You know, Buddy Hield's one of those players where like, in college, you could have seen him as a superstar. Like, I remember watching him in the tournament that year, and I was just like, this guy is a killer. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a way of carrying himself where it, like, screamed, I'm going to be a superstar. But then he ends up as just, like, a good chucker in the NBA. Like, it's just interesting. Like,
he's a good shooter, though, let's be honest.
Yeah, and he's a great shooter.
We'll see what happens postseason. Sixers could be a valuable piece, I think.
I think he would if Embiid was ever able to stay healthy when it mattered most.
Yeah, we'll see about that. They're an interesting team. Imagine, though, replace Chris Dunn with Jamal Murray on the Timberwolves. You'd have Jamal Murray. Well, back in the day, you'd have Jamal Murray with Zach LaVine and Kat. But now, imagine Jamal Murray, Ant Edwards, Kat, what's his name, Rudy Gibbert, Naz Reid. It's a nice team.
Yeah.
It's a really nice team, actually. What's that guy's name? The tall guy, McDaniels, right?
Yeah.
He's good. He's
a tough player.
He's a
Alexander Walker. Yo, I got a question for you. What do you think the ceiling of the Knicks is? Do you think the Knicks are gonna
pivot right now? Yeah.
Yeah, let's do a pivot. I want to find something that we deeply disagree with, and then I want to argue with you about it.
The Knicks ceiling. Okay, let me think about this. Fully healthy right now. Okay, right now the Knicks are, what's our record? 36-26. I honestly think we have a team of absolute dogs.
Absolute dogs.
These guys are playing, mind you, Tibbs is our coach. These guys don't get rest. Miles McBride played 47 minutes the other day when Brunson got injured in the first minute. And you know, I thought that trading Barrett, we were going to get some, you know, our depth was going to get hurt a little bit. We obviously made the trades. Bogdanovich, who could give you 20 on a night. Alec Burks, who would give you 12, 15 on good efficiency.
And a lot of heart.
And, yeah, a lot of heart and Stein.
A lot of passion.
We got a lot of heart on our team. We got Precious.
Precious Chua.
Precious Olajuwon.
Precious Olajuwon Achua leading the league in VORP. I swear to God. No, look it up. If you don't control Vorp for game or for minutes played and usage rate, Precious Achiuwa leads the league in Vorp.
You gotta explain what Vorp is.
Vorp is value over replacement player. It's a stat that I'm not really smart enough to understand the inner workings of, although it is commonly touted as like one of the best on-off stats. Is that a baseball stat? It's value over replacement player. Basically, they calculate the plus-minus differential between lineups where you were substituted out for the player that plays under you or above you, depending on how you want to look at it.
Okay.
So for Achiuwa, is he starting right now?
Yeah, he is.
So they basically would find the starting lineup and then compare his on-off rating with the lineup that is identical to that starting lineup where his backup center is in.
Interesting.
That's basically how they calculate it. And if you do it for... It works best for star players because there's massive sample sizes of when they get off the court, and they basically just track like the point differential difference between them and the guy who replaced them in the same lineups. So it paints a pretty solid picture of like how good a player is on the court. Problem is, to base that off, like, there's a lot of criticisms of these stats, and they're very noisy. To for Vorp to be good, it needs a massive sample size.
Vorp.
The Vorps and Schmorps and of the world. Jokic usually leads the league in Vorp, though. So it's just funny to see Precious Achiuwa, like, sitting on the top. Hey, maybe he has a sneaky MVP case.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, I mean, to answer your question, Matt, fully healthy. Brunson, DiVincenzo would probably be at two. OG, Randall, Mitch Robinson. I think we could win at maybe two playoff series. I think we could get to the conference finals. If we face the Celtics, I think we're toast. If we face the Bucks, I think we could take them to seven, probably. I feel like just the... I don't know. I've seen whenever Randall plays against Giannis, he just goes off. He just tries his hardest. He goes straight at him. We usually lose those games, but I don't know. Playoff magic, we have OG... I guess he's clamping Chris Middleton. Who's he clamping? Maybe he's clamping Dame. I think
That's
Josh Hart maybe clamps Dame. I don't know. But I feel like we have good, decent matchups against them. Celtics, though, is looking rough. I feel like anybody in the East against the Celtics is not looking good. Maybe just the Heat, I think, probably the best team to go against.
Yeah, the Heat are really interesting to me because they're basically at the same spot now that they're at every year where it's like they're starting to ramp up a little bit. They've won... Let's see. The Heat have won, like, 8 out of their last 10. That's a good sign for a team that knows that they have an on-off switch they can push.
Yeah, they're 6th right now, so they're out of the plan.
Out of the plan? I think, ideally, they're looking at the Cavs and licking their chops.
Yeah.
Like, the Heat need to stay in that 6th seed. I mean, as of today, Sixers-Bucks is the first-round matchup, and both of those teams do not want to deal with. I mean, the Bucks maybe would be happy about it. The Sixers are terrified.
Yeah, it's not good for the Sixers are probably getting bounced in the first round, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I would love to see the Sixers have a real playoff chance, but it just isn't ever going to happen at this point. Embiid's clock is starting to tick after this year. Like, he's going to want out of Philly. He's going to want...
Well, he's probably just going to want, like... I could see maybe he leaves, but also he's probably just going to want more, like, reinforcements, I guess, but...
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the front office has done everything that he wanted. Like, they got rid of Simmons, they got rid of Harden, and now they brought in a good haul from him. They gave Maxi the ball. I think the Sixers just need him to come back.
They didn't actually get that much back. They got Nick Batum. Fourth quarter, why the Batum in? They got Buddy Hield. They don't even have Korkmaz anymore. Who else do they have? They have they don't even have Pat Bev anymore.
Yeah.
They have Campaign.
I completely forgot about that trade.
Paul Reed. They don't have the best squad, so.
Yeah. Maxie's tough, though.
Honestly, do they? I don't know. I think the Cavs beat them in a series.
Whoa. Steaming take.
They probably do. Fully healthy, Cavs?
Yeah. I talked about this an hour ago with my friend on call, but we were talking about the Celtics-Cavs game.
Okay.
I would love to talk about that again because that is the
Celtics-Cavs game.
Crazy game last night. I don't know if you saw it, but...
No, I didn't. Oh, wait, Dean Wade? I saw Dean Wade take over.
The Dean Wade game. The Dean Wade masterclass.
That's fire.
I mean, Like, you couldn't have, like, anyone had a parlay on Dean Wade probably just, like, is balling out now.
They seem to have a white boy to, like, one white boy just balls out in the fourth quarter every other game. Like, I swear it was Max Strus doing the same thing, like, a week ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I didn't watch that. I'll have to watch it because Celtics hadn't lost in a while before that, right?
Yeah, Celtics were on a 10-game win streak.
Yeah, damn.
And they just got completely crushed by the Cavs in the fourth quarter. And there's usually NBA officiating is like pretty bad towards the end of games. Last night was good. Like they actually fixed a call that they mistake.
Tatum one.
The kick out. That was the correct call, and it made me really happy to see it instantly return back to the jump ball. I mean, ideally they wouldn't have made that call together. Though. But
Cavs without D. Mitch and Celtics fully healthy. No, without Holiday. No. Celtics fully healthy. It's interesting. I mean, Darius Garland had I think pretty good game. Obviously, Dean Wade probably had the best game.
Yeah, but so in these types of games, the Celtics are trying to make like a real statement about, not that they need to prove anything to anyone, but even at this point of the regular season, they're on a real win streak. They obviously want to maintain that, and they're playing against a team that's extremely hot. They've cooled off a bit, but the Cavs are a real, real team in the East, and they know that, and they're going into this game as like, this is a must-win game. Like, we can't allow any Eastern Conference contender to beat us.
I guess. It's a way, though.
It's a way, but they were pounding him to death. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pounding him. They, like, it was just like... winning, I'll just say. They were winning in the fourth quarter by a large, large amount, and that just collapsed. And to me, it was like watching a Celtics playoff game all over again. And I was just like, I thought this Celtics team was supposed to avoid that. This is not supposed to happen again.
Jrue Holiday did not have the best game this game. Minus 14, plus minus. Worst out of any player.
But yeah, the Cavs are a legit team. And I think I can see the Cavs beating the Bucks. See the Cavs beating the Magic.
Damn.
I mean, the Magic, obviously. I can see the Cavs beating the Heat.
I don't think the Cavs beat the Magic. The Bucks, though.
I think it might go seven. Because the Bucks, they might have a game where one of Dame or Giannis twists their ankle. And then and then Doc Rivers forgets how to coach for a game and calls a timeout when he shouldn't. And then suddenly it's a 2-2 series going back to Milwaukee.
But then think about it the other way. Like, Bobby Portis has a 30-point game. Dame drops a 50-ball, 12 threes. Giannis drops a triple double with 15 rebounds. Like, they could, bro. Chris Middleton could drop 30 in a game. Like,
yeah,
they got a squad, bro.
They do a squad.
Malik Beasley could hit six threes in a game, but they would like four in the fourth. I don't know. I think they could surprise us. They could be scary if they figure it all out.
I'm still high on the Bucks. I think the Bucks could beat the Celtics. I'm not saying that the Cavs beating the Bucks is anything that I would bet on, but I'm saying if it did happen, I wouldn't be like, oh. Like, I could see it happening if the Bucks have bad fate on their side and the Cavs have good fate. Because a lot of times in these playoffs, like, so much of it just comes down to health and, like, individual plays in a series that swing momentum. They can steal a game on the road, whatever. We don't know what will happen. But there's no point in speculating. And this is, like, for me, part of the problem with the NBA regular season where it's, like you get this game and then you're like, okay, so they choked. And you're, like, trying to piece together, like, how important is this loss actually? Mm-hmm. And then you realize, like, it doesn't really matter at all because none of these teams are really trying.
This is a regular season at the end of the day.
Like, they do care, but they also don't care whatsoever.
It's probably in the back of their heads, like, at that same time. They're definitely trying. They're definitely 100%. Trying. But there's a level of conservation, for sure. I want to talk about this Cavs player that's been on my mind today.
Who?
I was going to ask you. Dion Waiters, man. This guy was a killer. And I don't know about if people recognize how much of a killer he was. I think it was because I saw an Instagram reel about Dion Waiters' Rising Stars game versus Tim Hardaway Jr. They had like 5 minutes of just going at each other, draining threes in each other's faces. It was beautiful basketball. Yeah. So I have a little would you rather. Two guys, I think, I mean similar guys maybe, but Dion Waiters, you have to watch this video if you haven't watched his Rising Stars game against.
I think I know the one. It's him crazy. Just taking like the most ridiculous contested shots. Yeah, like
dribble, bop, bop, shoot. Okay, Hardaway. Yep, dribble, up, up, 3-pointer. Yep.
Yeah.
5 times in a row.
You know, I saw a thing saying Monty Ellis was the Michael Jordan of Dion Waiters.
Okay, I love those. I actually love.
They're
those.
They're really clever,
and that's probably true. I was gonna say Dion Waiters Rising Stars form or Tyreek Evans, free of allegations. playing with a free mind.
I'm just taking.
He's a good guy.
You know, I would say that 5 Deion Waiters is in the Rising Stars game could probably make a run for the 10 seed. Probably maybe even the 9 seed if we're talking. We're
talking. Play-in game.
Play-in game.
Yes. That's so stupid.
You know, if I love these like 5 of blank players. Like I think
yeah.
5 Wembanyamas would be possibly the greatest God. Teams. Imagine
Wemby glazing. Wemby glazing.
It's always yeah. I'm the only Wemby stan on this Wemby show, and I glazing. Think I should continue to be. I think Wemby deserves all glazing that is given his way. All
right, 5 Wembys or 5 Jokic's.
5 Wembys. Because 5 Jokic's doesn't work. 1 Jokic is better than 5 Wembys, but like 5 Wembys is like 5 Wembys.
5 Jokic's would just be like directing traffic. Just no dribbles. It would just be pass, 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 run, pass, run, pass.
Yeah.
Wemby just would be like rooted to the spot.
Like I think group. 5 Shengun's might beat 5 Jokic's.
Oh, you saw that?
That was piece? Wild. Shengun is a real player, man. 45 on Wembanyama.
Nagala is better than Wemby.
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
Nagala is better. You okay? We have to correct your take.
Okay, no. I think they're on the same tier. I'm not gonna say he's better.
He's
than
better.
Wemby.
No, he's better for sure. He's a more complete player in my opinion. Okay, we have to correct your take from last time. You said he was better than Wemby's. You said he was top 3 centers basically.
Top 3 centers, and the
you
one
said he's only what Embiid, Jokic were better.
Fourth, he's the 4th best center in the league in my book Embiid, because Jokic. I forgot AD. AD, which is
that.
Crazy. I forgot AD.
Can't AD.
But I stand behind that opinion.
Okay.
I think
Bam Adebayo is probably better.
I would take Wemby over Bam at this
point. Bam Adebayo.
Do you want to know what Wemby's stats are in the last month? But Bam is reliable, but I don't want Bam running my offense. Wemby over the last.
Of course not.
Yeah. Like Wemby the other night, like he had a 5x5 game. That and I know that's like not the most important thing.
What did he put up?
This was against the Lakers about a week ago. 27 points, 10 or on 7-for-16 shooting, regardless of efficiency. 8 rebounds, 5 steals, 5 blocks. The other night, he had 10 blocks. 7-6-5-4-5-5. This dude basically averages 5 blocks a game.
It's crazy.
Like, and I know that, like, Bam is a stronger defender at this point, but, like, we're not even considering the deterrence factor of Wemby. Mm-hmm. If people took the shots that they do against other players with Wemby on the court, he'd easily average 10 blocks. Because you have to double take yourself every single time that you go up against him in the paint.
If Bam Adebayo was his height, he'd have more blocks.
Yeah, probably, but he's not. He doesn't have an 8-foot wingspan.
Sabonis or Wemby?
Wemby. There, I said it. Like I know Sabonis is great. He's a good hub. He's leading the league in rebounds. Blah, 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 blah. Like he's son of Arvidas. He's a Lithuanian legend. I just
Sabonis
don't.
Is insane.
He is insane. I'm not talking.
He's averaging.
I'm not saying
28, bro. 8 assists, 14 rebounds, 40% from the 3, 60% from the field. That's absurd. 1 steal a game, all right, but blocks but not there at
the
all.
The thing is, I think if you put
3 turnovers, though.
If you put Wembanyama in Sabonis' spot on the Kings, they would not be in the position they are right now. They would be in like the 2 seed or something. We're talking about adding the best defender in the league to a team which. Doesn't necessarily struggle defensively, but just is like a mid defensive team.
All right, I mean, I guess you should say that part, but yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to do some sort of AI. I need to compose this for the future. But yeah. Anyways, this has been Airball, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Thank you for listening. We're gonna cue the outro music.
Yep.
Coming up on the hour here.
Lauri Markkanen is better than Wembanyama. No, he's not, probably.
I'm going to fade that one out. That does not need to be on our show.
Peace, guys.
Peace.